Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore. Welcome to the Bear Grease Render Podcast.
Yeah.
It's great to see everyone.
Is it really? Do you really feel that way?
Man, I feel like I have an audience. The people are set before I am. If the people were set in a triangle,
okay.
I would be at the point of the top of the triangle.
Right.
The people would be set out in front of me as if in an auditorium.
Mm. Right.
You know, Gary mm-hmm. Newcomb would be one point, and yep. Colby would be the other point.
Are you trying you to probably describe to people there. The layout of the room
yeah,
or the metaphor?
That I'm wasn't trying a very good description.
Like, are you no. trying to say you're at no. the peak of the pyramid?
So just before we started this episode,
Who's in the downline?
Yeah. Just before we started this episode, I said that I have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So y'all may not get to talk very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a monologue.
Wake me when it's
Clay
over.
No, we have a very,
live
very great
audience.
Group of guests here. Colby Moorhead of
hello,
Bear
hello,
Hunting
hello.
Magazine is here.
The
it's
bear
been a while
tech.
Since you've been on.
It's been a while.
Bear Hunting
great to
magazine.
Have you.
Yeah.
So, Matt, if you're new to the podcast, if you're new to the Bear Grease world, Colby Moorhead, he and I worked together when I had Bear Hunting Magazine. Now, Colby owns, operates Bear
has
Hunting
acquired,
Magazine.
Yeah.
The world
has acquired Bear Hunting Magazine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way we say it in the
yeah,
business. That's what like Donald
in
Trump would say. I acquired a business.
Yeah.
It just means you're rich and fat and wealthy.
Oh.
When you say acquired and don't yeah. say buy.
Right.
So Colby acquired Bear Hunting Magazine.
I don't know
but,
if you should be
I receive it.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of ways to get wealthy in this country, and one of them is print magazines about extremely niche content. Right, Colby?
Oh,
Colby's
yeah.
Colby's rolling in the dough.
The passion pays off.
Well, no, Bear Hunting Magazine, I had it for 8 years, and it's mm-hmm. a big passion of my life, and a very incredible near decade of my life. Only print Bear Hunting Magazine in the world, been
facts.
In print for 23 years, got covers bear hunting all across the country. Don't DM me and ask me for bear hunting tactics, because I will say the same thing I say
yeah.
all the time, Colby.
Yeah.
What do you think I tell them?
info@bearhunting.com.
Yeah, that's right. No, I say, hey man, for real, you should subscribe to Bear Hunting Magazine
mm-hmm.
because there's always going to be, you know,
always used to tell people one single issue is not going to teach you how to bear hunt. Mm-hmm. But if you subscribe to it for a year, you're going to learn a lot.
Everything you need to know to take a bear.
Everything.
Plus, it looks good.
That's right. Yeah. It is a great looking magazine.
It's fun to get a print magazine. So Colby's here. Dr. Misty Newcomb is here.
Thank you
so much for being here.
The presence.
Misty has some really cool shoes on.
Yes.
Those are the trendiest shoes that Newcomb's ever owned.
They probably are. Like when I put them on, I thought this is maybe too much for us.
No,
like,
I love it. That's
perfect.
Great.
I don't know if we can pull this off.
Banana pudding colored pair of Nike tennis shoes.
Wow. I think those are called just straight Nikes.
Nikes.
You drop the Nike. You drop the E.
Really?
Yeah, they're classy.
I've started running again.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they say you run better. If you
feel good about yourself,
if you have cool shoes,
that's what they say. To Misty's left is Christy,
hello.
Landbridge Spillmaker.
Christy,
Mrs.
That.
Landbridge Spillmaker.
Yeah.
Great to
also
have you, Christy.
Sporting some nice kicks.
Yes,
she
you
is.
Have wonderful shoes
here.
On. This is like a Nike commercial.
Let's get a little picture here. Bear Grease, sponsored
Christy,
by.
Christy, great to have you. Christy,
thanks for having me.
You're pretty pumped about the Alaska episode we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go.
So if you're new to the Bear Grease Render, we are going to talk about our last episode, which was a Alaska Stories episode, which was a new thing we've never done, which is a something I'm very interested in, Alaska. To Mrs. Landbridge left is Mr. Landbridge, Josh Landbridge Spillmaker.
Hello.
Good to see you,
hello.
Josh. You looking spry like a fly fisherman.
Thank you. Been out on the river a lot lately.
Mm-hmm. Fish biting good.
I actually learned something the other day that I was not aware of. I had a guide friend tell me a few months ago, and he said, you know, when there's a full moon, he said the fish won't bite. And that had just blown through my memory and not even thought about it. And I went out with a good buddy of mine the other night. And he's as good or better a fisherman than I am. And we put our lines in the water and we just expected to just tear it up. Went out after work. And we fished for nearly 3 hours and didn't get a single bite. And then on the way, we went home with our tail between our legs.
Did you try?
Catch one fish.
I caught one fish.
I caught one fish.
I got
was
one
it
bite.
Not a single bite.
Be
one
honest,
bite.
Josh.
It was right at dark.
Did you try casting your fly on the other side of the boat?
I tried casting everything.
Oh. Okay.
So on the way home, I look up and I realize it's that mega moon. That blue super moon. Mm. And I went home and started doing some research and sure enough, it severely affects.
Don't get me started on supermoons.
Uh-oh.
You've done it.
What?
I think the whole supermoon, I'm a young man, okay, by many standards.
Ish.
Uh-huh.
And I have seen at least 10 once-in-a-lifetime supermoons. I mean, does the media in the world not hype up these supermoons like it's something you're never going to see the rest
of
your life?
Is the blue moon brighter than
the first
one?
Did they do this when you were a kid?
No.
Our final guest, Gary Believer Newcomb.
Welcome back.
Yeah, did they talk about supermoons when you were a kid?
They were upfront, honest, legitimate.
They were just moons.
Good folks. Now they just make stuff up. I agree with you.
This is nonsense. This is something you should be behind.
Well, listen, I think there's
a supermoon party, just so y'all know, we're different here. And I literally invited people to meet me at a park to watch it. This special supermoon.
It's true.
FaceTimed everyone in my family so that we could all see it together.
And then there's the other thing is that the moon never looks as good in a video or photo.
Never.
Oh, my goodness.
I will be looking at some incredible moon.
Unless you have a
picture
of it.
You're like, oh, look at that white dot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. So Dad used to tell me when we would be out and about and looking at land or whatever, and you would think when you're in the mountains, everybody talks about views, like a land and a house. Does it have a view? Is it beautiful? Is it aesthetically pleasing? And what would you used to say, Dad?
When I was a kid, we didn't have enough money to think about a view.
That's right.
We wanted a roof. Actually, that's not true, but I mean, we didn't have a lot of money.
Well,
but views just wasn't, I mean, it wasn't a big deal.
Right.
We wanted to be able to see our next meal.
Yeah. Well, no, it made a lot of sense when you said that to me when I was young, is that there was a time when aesthetics were not as big a deal. I mean, people literally coming out of World War II.
Yeah, relate super this moons, back to the moon.
Views. The world is enamored with all this.
You should
external,
be external,
flashy marketing.
You care about
they've got us
nature.
Around their finger.
What on earth? They've got, this hey, is ridiculous. It didn't cost anyone anything. This is not a consumer thing. This
it's a the supermoon is a conspiracy.
Yeah. It's a
government conspiracy.
It's the old Maslow's model. We've climbed that pyramid to a point where
we can
got
talk
time.
About supermoons and
talk
views.
About this. And it's Judy true. Said, hey, the supermoon's going on outside. And I didn't tell her, but I like Gunsmoke better. But I went outside and I looked and I thought, it looks like the same moon I see every night, except maybe a little bigger.
I'm pretty sure, though, that I'm struggling a lot here.
I'm joking. I love the supermoon. I'm just saying, I feel like there's a lot of drama around the supermoon. But that brings me to my next segment of the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a monologue.
Moons and wildlife.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Josh was talking about how he didn't catch a fish with the moon.
Also children at school.
I have spent 43 years studying the moon and people's reaction to it. Okay, I probably became aware of it when I was like 12, 13.
My entire
but about how the moon affects everything. One of my best friends in high school, Nick Graham Cunningham, his father owned a body shop. And I remember them saying, they say it as if it's fact.
Yep.
When the full moon is out, business will be good because people will have wrecks. There was, you know.
Why? Because they're looking at the moon?
Well, that's just it. Why?
We don't know why.
Why?
In banking, you had crazy people come in and want to borrow money.
On a full moon?
In school.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm serious.
You serious?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, not really crazy, you'd get loan requests that was just out, you know, it just wasn't right up
okay,
the
snow. It's a given in schools that on full moons, it's going to be a struggle. And when the full moon and Halloween hit or any holiday that includes a lot of candy, your next day is going to be awful. It's just going to be a difficult.
Is this a self fulfilling prophecy?
It for sure impacts behavior.
That's.
I don't think so. One time, so I get these like discipline reports, and this is why I don't think it is. I get these discipline reports, and one
Misty's
day,
been studying this for
well,
43
my
years.
My whole life, I've been studying this. One time, I got a discipline report, and I was like, "What on earth is going on?" And someone just kind of randomly, it was like out of this world, and someone said, "Hey, is it a full moon?" And we looked, and sure enough, it was. That has happened to me over and over and over again, where you have these crazy... It's like I tell my kids, I'm not superstitious. I am a little superstitious.
Well, there's no doubt that the moon affects wildlife. I mean, there's just no debate about it. But in whitetail deer research, there's a lot of new studies that because white-tailed deer hunters have very strong philosophies about the moon, including me. And the research they show, basically the moon doesn't really affect white-tailed deer movement.
Really?
I mean, yeah. I think there's so much of human life that is anecdotal, biased confirmation of just things that we think or see. Like, so if you drive every single night of your life and stuff happens to you every single night, but when there's a full moon, there's this shining beacon and you remember stuff, somehow it imprints your mind that happened on a full moon. That happened on a full moon. That happened on a full moon. And pretty soon when the full moon comes up, you're looking for something bad to happen. Yeah. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I do think there is a legitimate impact on.
Do you take your dogs coon hunting on a full moon?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even go.
And so you don't even know if it could be good.
No, he's done it, and it's worthless.
I've coon hunted. I've used I'm contradicting myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm telling you what I believe, but deep down, like in the my heart and soul, I believe the moon is the most powerful thing on the planet. I mean, my brain is like telling me this can't be true, but I've coon hunted with such good dogs night after night after night after night. You turn them loose on a full moon night, and just stuff happens.
They get, yeah.
Yeah, we've had crazy
stories.
The last 7 years, I have not purposely, if it's a full moon, I'm just like, tack on it. I don't even go. But then again, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, because I don't even give it a chance to be good.
That's right.
Because maybe every time that I didn't
go. Have you and Brent Reeves talked about this? Does he feel the same way?
Every coon hunter feels the same way.
By the way, where is Brent Reeves? Does he have older, cooler friends?
You know what?
Now?
Brent Reeves.
He's a celebrity now. Yeah. Just saying. I mean,
it's kind of like diva. Trying to get Beyonce on here, you know?
I mean, but Clay, just a second. Going back to your moon research with the white-tailed deer, did First Light use this research in the development of their new white-tailed deer?
That was good, Christy.
Really good, Christy.
Well,
really good.
Since you brought it up.
Very good.
First Light. First Light does have, I mentioned to my team here that I wanted to talk about First Light white-tail gear. First Light has made a big, big swing at the white-tail world, making full lines of white-tail kits, and they even have stuff that's made for people hunting in hot, humid weather in the Southeast. And so it's September. It's time. You ought to check out First Light for your white-tail hunting. And First Light has a pattern called Spectre. It's designed for tree stand whitetail hunting. A percentage of every sale of Spectre goes to the National Deer Alliance. So I don't want to say how much, but I want to say upwards of $100,000 has gone to the NDA from First Light Spectre sales.
Is that publicly knowable information?
I don't know. It is now, I guess. But that brings up another interesting point. The National Deer Alliance, Brent Reeves, he's too famous to be on the Bear Grease Render anymore, but he's not too famous to go to the premiere of a new documentary film called Wild Tail. It's a documentary about the country's most successful wildlife conservation story. And it's a documentary about the whitetail deer. And last night, Brent and I went to Little Rock, and Brent was the MC of this,
really?
like sports coat. Brent and I, we thought we were going to like a hunting event. And we show up there, and it's like people in like sports coats, hors d'oeuvres, suits were there, Dad. And
surprise.
And I told Brent to wear his overalls.
Did he wear his overalls?
He didn't.
Okay.
I was ashamed of him. It's the first time I've seen him in just like regular pants in a while. But no, Brent emceed the event. He did a great job.
Really?
Our friend Austin Booth was there. Austin Booth, the director of the Game and Fish, introduced everybody. The producer of the film from Florida that made that, they've spent 18 months making this documentary film, has an incredible amount of people on it. I would say there's upwards of 20 people. I like the film. It's a different kind of documentary than I've ever seen. In some ways, like the style of it is very fast paced, very information driven, very engaging. It's but it tells the whole story of the American white-tailed deer and how, you know, there used to not be a lot of deer. Now there's more deer than we've ever had. Since even pre-European settlement, there's more white-tailed deer.
Really?
Yeah. And so, and then the Kip Adams, one of the main guys at the National Deer Association, came in from Pennsylvania. And so we all watched the film in this big auditorium, and it was really neat. But a cool part of that film, Dad, is that me and Steve Rinella are on it quite a bit.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
They interviewed me a year ago here about deer hunting, and they did a good job. I really
did. You remember
it.
That, or were you surprised when it came up on the screen?
I knew. I remembered it. I did remember it. I didn't remember what I said, but I did remember it.
So you think they did a good job because they picked you and Steve?
Could be confirmation bias. Could just be completely.
Did you watch it and have regrets of what
was
you
there
said?
A full moon last night?
Yeah,
maybe. Hey, how did our Render boy get that gig, man? I mean, they just heard his voice and said he's a natural. We want him to narrate this thing.
Yeah.
Could we call him either Render Boy or Render Boy? Either one of those. I'm good with changing his name.
Yeah, Render Boy.
I like Render Boy.
He doesn't even come up here anymore, old Brent. That's funny. No, he did a great job.
Is he going to be available to watch elsewhere?
Yeah, so they're doing a film tour all across the country. Currently, there's 5 cities that it's going to be in, but they've got plans for how it's going to roll out, and eventually the public would be able to watch it.
Great.
But it was a good film. It's really well put together. The style of it was unique.
I'm taken back, Colby, based on your question, and Clay got to watch the film last night. Remember earlier he was talking about that triangle where he's like the top of the pyramid and the rest of us are the base. Uh-huh. So we're the base.
Yeah.
So we're the common shoulders. People are going to get to watch that film at some point.
Yeah.
But not yet.
Well, at some point, Christy, at some point you can watch it. So that was cool.
What do you have in your hand, Newt?
I have a Phelps Akern Grunner in my hand.
That's like worth $10 million right now.
Because
you can't even get one.
These went out for sale on Phelps' website, and they sold out in about 24 hours. They're going to make some more in November, but not very many. The reason that they can't just whip them up is because that call is made of white oak. One of my buddies, Scott Brown, he bought one, and he called me and was going to give me a hard time for cutting down white oak trees to make grunt calls.
Oh. Hey, good point.
Yeah. It's like, no, it's made of white oak, and so they just only had so much wood, but then mainly the acrylic guts of that call, the actual innards of the call, they have to order that stuff, and it has to be machined. And a quality grunt call or any kind of quality call is usually going to be acrylic, whether it's a duck call or something. So that's not plastic. That's machined acrylic.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And but this is that inhale, exhale call, which, I've talked about.
So stop taunting us with it. So because we can't get it.
Well, I'm just saying, I wanted to thank everybody.
America, you missed your chance.
I wanted to thank everybody for coming to the...
I feel like everyone got one except me.
Yeah, you were out baiting bears. Late.
Yep.
How about that coonskin cap?
Yes, and we put a coonskin cap on the Meat Eater Auction House of Oddities, which the Meat Eater Auction House of Oddities, which is set up to fund. They were trying to buy a piece of land that was going to open up public access, and Ryan Callahan leads that. This was they have specific initiatives. And they were trying to raise $150,000, and they raised way more than that.
Ooh,
so
nice.
Sweet.
Yeah, way more than that. It's all public knowledge. You could you could look on and see how much they went for.
What'd the coonskin hat go for?
$2,500.
That's
Josh's coonskin hat.
Did you see that picture
$2,500.
Of the lovely Mrs. Christy Schoolmaker wearing it too?
Sorry, Christy.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I wasn't going to tell anybody.
Yeah, that hat, that's a nice hat. That's somebody's getting to barking.
Those coons were caught on a full moon. No, I'm just kidding.
They may have been.
If you could get some coons on a full moon, they would be priceless.
It'd be worth even more. Yeah.
Thank you for whoever bought that coons skin hat.
Yeah, thank you guys. I mean, there was some incredibly generous bids on there.
Yeah.
Did you see how much the dinner with Steve Rinella went for? Yes. Dinner for four with Steve Rinella.
$12K.
At his house. $12K? Okay.
Did $25K.
More?
What?
Wow. This is a game that Bear and I get to play every day when he tells me, guess how much money I made.
I think I saw it. Well, yeah. Went at $50,000.
Went for $50,000.
You're kidding.
Oh, wow. Wowza.
Yeah.
Somebody paid $50,000.
For what?
For
dinner at Rinella's house.
Steve Rinella's house. And clearly it was someone who was wanting to make a...
Donation.
I mean, it was somebody who was serious about conservation, wanted to make a donation, and was just that's what the Auction House Oddities is about, is people being generous for land access and different stuff. So that's really cool.
What
everybody
at
Meteor was really proud. Yeah, I don't know. we better make it good.
No doubt.
Gold leaf.
A
As a parent, nothing keeps me up at night more than the idea of something happening to my children. But if something happens to me and I'm not around to protect them, that's a true nightmare. Having term life insurance for myself is crucial because I can rest easier knowing my children and loved ones can have some financial support even if I'm not there. That's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. Having life insurance just gives me that extra confidence throughout the day, knowing that my family will be financially cared for if something bad happened to me. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You can be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/bear. That's meetfabric.com/bear. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that's stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You remember I had a lot to say on this podcast. This week I got to watch, I was able to see in advance of the release the movie The Blind about Phil Robertson.
Okay.
The Duck Commander.
Is it like it's like an autobiography?
Like a Hollywood movie.
What do they call it? A biopic?
It's
Wait. It's a Hollywood movie. Does that mean it's dramatized?
When I say Hollywood, really? I don't mean it was shot in Hollywood. I just mean it is a movie.
Cinematic.
It's a cinematic, like, well done movie that could play on the big screen.
Is there someone playing Phil Robertson?
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
100%.
It's dramatized.
So it's a dramatization.
Yes.
I'm sure there's drama in that story too.
Oh, it's,
I've heard the history.
I've never met the Robertsons. I never have, but Phil Robertson's hard not to respect.
Yeah.
I mean, he for real is. I mean, he's the real deal. And then I've heard bits. I'm familiar with their story to some degree, but when you watch the movie, you see how wild it really was. Like Phil Robertson was a wild man. He played. He had a rough upbringing. You know, it shows all this in the movie. He had a rough upbringing down in Louisiana, and he ended up going to college on a football scholarship and started over
Terry Bradshaw.
Terry Bradshaw.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Terry Bradshaw was the backup quarterback.
Yeah,
yeah. And so they showed that, and then Phil doesn't really want to play football and doesn't play his senior year and starts duck hunting. And after that, his life kind of spirals pretty hard and gets involved in some pretty rough stuff. And it shows a lot. It really does. They were candid on what they showed. And, but then he, I don't want to give away the movie, but it was good. I like those guys. But the movie comes out in late September. I want to say, can somebody look up?
Yeah,
for me?
I'll look at it.
Like on the big screen? Theaters?
They're screening it in certain cities.
Okay.
But the movie's called The Blind. And it's really good. Really good. The Robertsons are, Phil's a man of faith for sure. A believer, and they're really strong, outspoken believers.
September 28th.
So, yeah, The Blind.
Cool.
Phil Robertson. Mm-hmm. Well, what did you guys think of the Alaska Stories podcast?
Quite entertaining.
I liked it.
Dad, why don't you tell the story that you were going to tell?
Okay.
Me and Dad have a story.
Yeah. Near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to Alaska.
Canada.
Not Alaska. Canada.
When we do our Canada stories. Why wouldn't that work?
You know,
Canada is a wild, woolly place, but you can't have a Canada stories
podcast. You can't even tell a story here and lie a little bit. You get caught immediately. It doesn't have anything to do that I'm 92 years old. My brain's about half right. But we were going to Canada, I guess on your first bear hunt, sort of out of the country. And anyway, we were on a secondary flight, little puddle jumper, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And
Air Canada.
All of a sudden,
a plane with maybe like 30 people on it.
Yeah, there's
small
quite a
plane.
Few. It wasn't a little bitty guy, but so I'm just sitting there. I'm on the aisle, and Clay's next to the window. I notice he's looking out the window all the time, and finally he says, "Dad, there's something wrong. This plane's been circling now several times over around the airport or a city or something." And about that time, a stewardess came on and goes, "Things aren't going well." And
we hope you are having a nice afternoon. Things for us aren't
is
so
everyone
great.
Right with Jesus?
Things for you are about
let
to
me,
get
let
worse.
Me tell. I don't want to hijack your story, but it was interesting. We took off, you know, straight off the runway, and then the plane started to bank, which is common with a plane. Mm-hmm. You know, they can only go one of two directions on a runway, and if you're going a different direction, the plane has to turn. And so the plane banked, and you kind of felt it bank, and it just stayed banked for like 20 minutes. Like And so, I was like, but this it was subtle.
Yeah.
But I was like, we're going in circles. And after like the second time, I was like, we're circling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty neat you observe that. And so the stewardess came on and, you know, she handled it real well. I don't want to scare y'all to death, but we're about to die.
Really?
But she said, look, we've got some problems with our landing gear. And we're going to take this real serious. You know, we're not going to. So would you. Young man, would you handle that door? This is what you do. This guy, would you handle this? Get your oxygen down and put your head between your legs. And so she went through the whole deal of how we were going to handle this crash. I mean, the landing gear wouldn't come down, at least one leg of it. And so what I found interesting was here I am, an older guy, got my family raised, and I'm thinking, well, Lord, make it quick. You know, I don't mind going, but I'd hate to just suffer real bad. But Clay's young. He's got a family. He's got a wife. He's got a lot of responsibilities. And so he had a few more prayer requests than I did. But anyway, how did it end up?
Well, so
we landed.
There's Dad and I jumped out.
Yeah.
No, the stewardess came on and she told us what was going on. And what it was is that the brakes of the landing gear didn't work.
Okay.
And they were anticipating a potential crash on the landing. And the stewardess, she said, so we are preparing for a crash landing. This is what we would do if there's a crash landing. And I mean, it was like, it wasn't a drill. And from the time we started our descent.
Is this over where you took off?
Yeah,
or is
it was
you're
like
headed to your destination.
Apparently, they took off and everything was okay. And when they went to pull the landing gear back up, it wouldn't pull back up. And I just remember the problem was is that there were no brakes on the landing gear, so you were just going to come in super hot and potentially like burn the rubber off the tires, spark up on the plane. They had fire trucks. Wow. So we circle for forever, for probably an hour, because they're trying to run the fuel out of the plane. And so they run all the fuel out of the plane. And then when we go down to land, but from the time we start to descend, that stewardess at Air Canada was taught to yell. What did she yell? She yelled nonstop, like a phrase like, cover your head, watch your feet. We're going to give you something good to eat. I don't know what she said. But we had our heads down, and wow. She's going, like, it wasn't erratic. It was, she was screaming something that she was supposed to yell at us. And we really thought this is going to be a crash landing. We did. And they had fire trucks all down the airstrip. And, I just remember it was just a rough, fast landing.
Hey, you know, let me add one thing about that trip. I thought it was kind of fun as the daddy. We bear hunted, and we couldn't get a bear. And our guide couldn't put us on a bear. And finally, Clay said, would it be any problem if I went back to this other pasture we were on? And the guy said, well, yeah, you can go back over there. Within about 5 minutes, he'd killed a pretty good bear with an amazing shot with his bow. So, I mean, he did his own guide work.
Yeah, that was a good hunt. That was that bear right up there, us sitting right up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd seen a bear out in an oat field the first day, and I liked the spot, and we were having trouble, and we never went back there, and I just had a feeling. And I said, hey, take me back over there and just let me out of the truck. And he was like, okay. And he pulled me up on a county road, and we had permission to hunt this place. And I jumped a barbed wire fence, ran out into this oat field, came around a corner. There's a bear in the middle of this oat field laying on its belly, like right at dark, shoveling oats in its mouth.
And that is awesome.
And I'd been shooting my Matthews DXT and killed a bear. Yep, that was a great trip. Thanks, Dad. Yeah, so that was the time we almost crashed. Josh, have you ever had any near-death experiences?
Trying to think.
In Canada?
I have. Not in Canada. Man, but I was never much of a daredevil. I didn't drive my car fast and didn't. But one thing I love
you
to do.
You did listen to Metallica.
That's right. That's right. That was life-threatening. And then, but we used to, man, we used to love to jump off bluffs when I was a teenager. And we would go to the lake and jump off bluffs, but we'd go to the river and jump off bluffs too. And there's a spot that we all called it Skull Rock because it kind of looked like a skull. It was 43 feet high, but you had to hit a hole that was about, I don't know, maybe 10 foot around. Mm. And when you hit the water, you had to ball up because you would still hit the bottom. And man, we used to do that. It was thrilling to me, but I look back on it now and I'm like, God, that was stupid.
Yeah.
And we used to swim up into tunnels against the current that you couldn't turn around in.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I just think if the slightest little thing went wrong,
mm-hmm.
but I loved being in the water back then. And I know you had a close call in the water. Mm-hmm. We loved doing stupid stuff in the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I look back and think many of those could have been life threatening, but we just.
Christy, have you ever had a near death experience in Canada or Alaska?
No, nope, I have not.
Anywhere else?
No, I think the only story I would tell, and really just to make fun of myself, is that there was a summer we were hiking, and one of the people with us, I was actually with Clay and Misty Newcomb on this hiking trip, screams ahead of us, this young girl, and finds this huge timber rattler. Do you remember
this?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Clay Clay identifies it. It's a 30-year-old.
It was, whatever.
Single
male.
It was the biggest timber rattler I've ever seen personally.
Really?
Alive.
Bigger than that?
No, no. I mean, I didn't see that one.
Okay. You didn't see it alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this.
And it was a super intense hike that had like a, it has the biggest drop off. So you're kind of unnerved anyway, just doing that with kids.
Right. So we did that. Like a month later, we're on a camping trip and we're out with your brother, Misty. We walk by, there's a rattlesnake. I highly respect the rattlesnake because it tells you, I'm here, get out of my way. So, rattlesnake. Like 2 weeks after that, Josh and I decided to go hiking in Fayetteville, Mount Kessler. We're up there. And I am terrified of snakes. And I've had these two experiences. And I hear this sound.
She's a little gun shy.
And I jump up on a rock and just start screaming. And Josh is like,
for the Lord to help her.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'm always crying out to Jesus in these moments. And I'm on there. And I was like, snake rattler. And Josh is just looking at me like I'm insane. And a half a second later, this man comes by on a mountain bike that is clicking.
Oh. It was his pub.
And the click of his like triggered PTSD inside of me. And anyway, no, I've not had any near-death experiences that
So her near-death experience was that she was within 60 feet of a timber rattler.
Well, actually, I think her near-death experience is that she was within 60 feet of a mountain bike.
That's right. That was the near-death experience.
Dad, what would you say your nearest to death experience has been?
You know, I just hadn't had any.
Well, I'm safe driving. What about Vietnam?
Vietnam. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that would
Vietnam.
Be.
Vietnam. Oh, you know, I really wasn't. I mean, anybody can die in Vietnam, but I didn't get put in crazy situations. I was transferred to within just like 20 miles of the DMZ with a bunch of Marines. And my buddy down at middle part of Vietnam called around and had me transferred down to him. And he was getting hit every night. And
they were shelling
the base. I was mad at him, man. I mean, I got off the plane and started looking for people with faded fatigues. I'm thinking, man, you can't survive in Fubai. Mm. And my mother prayed every night for me. And I mean, once I stepped in Fubai, a rocket never hit for a year.
Really?
Wow. And Quang Tri.
Quang Tri just got boom.
That's where you were?
That's where I was. The Marines base, wow. Right on the DMZ, and it got hit all the time.
Amazing.
Now, I've never heard you tell that story quite like that, or I don't remember it that tight and concise.
It was serious. I was mad. My best friend, in fact, I spent the day with him yesterday in Little Rock. And I wouldn't even hardly speak to him. I said, Sears, you've got... with your CEO and got me moved down here into a pit that's chances us getting out of here are slim and none.
Hmm.
And nary a rocket hit, not even one.
Hmm.
Wow. You know, so it's pretty, that's pretty fun.
Hmm.
But hey, while we're talking about Vietnam, I think I've done this, but the guy, when you said thanks to the people that bought that hat, it made me think of this. The guy that looked up my old buddy.
Yes.
I hope he's listening. And we got a hold of him, had a great reunion, and probably going to go to Florida and see him.
So Dad talked about, I mean, you had to said his name, didn't you?
Yeah, Quint.
Quint, yeah. Dad talked about Quint on one of the podcasts, and Quint was this guy they knew in Vietnam, lost touch with him, thought he was dead. I mean, they didn't hear that he was dead. They just assumed he was dead. And then 40 years passes?
We look for him. We look for him almost every few years. You know, we just whatever you do to look for people.
Dad and his buddy that got him into the war zone down there always wondered what happened to Quint. And I've heard Dad talk about Quint my whole life. And he always says, we figure he's dead. Well, a Bear Grease podcast listener who has some incredible research powers, for real, with his job, he has...
Wink, wink.
He could know about anything you wanted to know. He, legally, it's not like an undercover deal. He found Quint, reached out to me and said, hey, here's that guy's phone number.
For real? That's amazing.
I mean, wow. Pretty much.
Yeah.
I love
that. And I think I can't remember the details. It was all within the boundaries of something that was ethical, and he may have even reached out to that lady. I think he reached out to Quint's daughter and said, "Hey, do you mind if I give your, you know, this?"
Could have.
He talked to her,
but
because
we
I never
contacted
did.
Her first. Okay. In fact, I was the one that contacted her, even though Quint and Sears were the really,
yeah,
like brothers. And anyway, he had a real nice daughter, and she was just excited that we'd called her. And
yeah.
So anyway,
it's pretty wild.
In fact, she just sent a picture of the three of us
really?
To Sears yesterday. He got it, oh, it was a few days ago. He
I'd
sent
like to
me
an
email on. So anyway, thank you.
Which of you listening right now took a class in school about Family Finances 101? No one? Yeah, me neither. Like the importance of a will or college savings plan or even life insurance or estate planning. We have to know these things. But how do we figure it all out? That's why I'm excited to partner with Fabric by Gerber Life. Life insurance is important to me. It just gives me security in knowing that if anything happened to me, my family would remain financially stable in my absence. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You can be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/bear. That's meetfabric.com/bear. MEET fabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that's stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Colby, near-death experience?
I got a couple. You want a longer one or shorter one?
Well, let's see how good they are. Why don't you grade them for me?
Grade them.
On a scale all of right. 1 to 10, how good are they?
The longer one's the better one.
Okay.
The shorter, and it involves duck hunting.
Okay.
The shorter one is squirrel camp. Wait, no. The long one is squirrel camp. Shorter one is duck hunting.
Well, just take us right to the good stuff.
Okay. Squirrel camp. So, growing up, my dad just like knows the river, like back and forth, like always on it. When I was born, like he was a commercial fisherman. And so, he met a lot of characters. And so, at one point in time, every year he would go to squirrel camp. And I was excited. I get to leave school early. We're going to go to squirrel camp. We're going to camp out with all these guys. It's great stuff. But we're mainly just fishing. But we camp out on this bluff on the river. And they had made this big, they constructed this big overhang to put all the tents under that were was made with bamboo. And then they show me what happens whenever you put bamboo inside of a fire. You know, it just like pops real loud. Mm-hmm. And I'm in like third grade. And so there's this drop off that, oh, it was about 15 feet of a drop off, is kind of like a pretty steep grade. And so that night there was a fire about 6 feet from that drop off. All the guys, the grown guys, were over here talking. And so I'm just throwing bamboo in there, and I'm just like 4th of July over here, just like popping and everything. And it's just great. And so, you know, growing up with fireworks, you just really feel like you understand certain principles in life, like the law of the dud, where you throw, you know, light one and it just doesn't go off.
The law of the dud.
The law of the dud. And so I was like, I threw this piece of bamboo in there and nothing. And I'm like, dud, where's the next one? And I go to throw it in there and that thing just explodes with fury and you got all these embers just popping out. And to me, it could have been like an atomic bomb. Like, you know, it just seems huge. I took one step back too far and all of a sudden I just fall off this thing. And so like, I'm just sliding down it and I'm just grabbing, trying to grab a hold of whatever I could. And before that,
it's at night. Nobody's seen you fall.
No. And before then,
it's a big river.
And before then, my dad had told me to put a life jacket on if I was going to keep doing that. And I was always obedient. I was like, yeah, all right. He's like, you either stop doing that or you put a life jacket on. So I had a life jacket on.
So he could see the threat that like you're going to fall off into
the river.
He's
like, there's possibility.
And this isn't like a little creek. This is like the Red River.
This is a sulfur river.
This is like a huge, big, nasty, muddy river.
Yeah. And so like I'm sliding down and I'm just grabbing whatever I can. And then I land in the water on my back. And there's a little shelf there that's probably about 3 foot wide. And there was just enough water where I couldn't turn over, so I was like a turtle on his back. And I just remember how big the moon was, and then...
Oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. Oh, no.
Super moon.
Curse you, full moons.
Anyways, at that same time, there was a boat going down the river, and so all of a sudden, there's these waves just like coming over me. And I'm just like freaking out. I was like, is this how this happens? Yeah, and I remember and then I remember like just a silhouette of a guy just like full dive off of it. And he lands like maybe like 5 feet to my right.
Oh, wow. He jumped off into the river.
Yeah. Earlier that day, he had like jumped out of the boat and was like, throw me some Ivory soap. He was wanting to take a bath and stuff. So like, just love the water. And then I see another figure come over and just like come down at like the Silver Surfer, you know, and they reached me at the same time. And so, my dad had always told me, like growing up, whenever I would get in trouble or I was really getting close to getting in trouble, he'd be like, boy, I'm going to plant a boot. So they reached me at the same time. My dad grabs me. And the only way to get me up is he would lift and then he would kick me. And so I thought he had finally planted a boot.
That was a good. I'd say that was a strong one.
Yeah, yes. Very good story.
Eight and a half.
Yeah.
Maybe even a 9 with the supermoon comment.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That was good. Misty, near death?
You know, I don't really have any near death experiences. My parents rode motorcycles. One time, I mean, like punchline, we hit a deer on a motorcycle.
Full man?
No.
Yeah.
You know.
That was good, Cole.
But I think I mainly just watched my brothers do stupid things and just thought, I'm not going to do that.
Mm.
And
that's good.
That's real good.
That's real good. I was always too afraid to get too risky. Mm-hmm. You know, drove slow and all that made you a good banker.
I didn't drive snow. Actually, probably driving is probably the nearest death.
When I was dating Misty, she was young then. I was young too. And she would come and tell me, she'd be like, man, I was driving down the road today and the car just did a 360. Oh my
God. It just did.
Yeah, I mean, for real. Like, that happened. And I just said, what? And she was like, yeah, I cut the wheel and the road was wet and it just like zipped, just did like a 360. I mean,
oh my goodness.
Do you remember?
I just remember
being like, this isn't okay. You've got to learn how to drive.
Hey, the Geo Tracker she had was quite entertaining to Judy and I.
Yeah.
I mean, there was not a spot on there that didn't look like somebody beat it up with a hammer.
Yeah, it's true. I've Wow. I learned by doing.
My buddy had a Geo Metro, and we used to pick it up and put it on the sidewalk.
You know what? She lasted a long time. Everyone kind of made fun of it because we got it new, and it looked fine. I mean, Geo Metros aren't like fancy cars, yeah, but no. We paid for our own car, so I could afford it, and I was super proud of it. I beat that thing. I mean, like, I was super rough on it.
When we got married, we ended up.
Oh, you had that car when you got married.
Yeah we drove it. We drove it for a while.
So many of our friends ended up. We ended up giving it
to my brother, to Zach.
I do remember
that. And we gave it to him as a gift. And one day, he was driving it, and he said, "Hey, Clay, it was kind of like, thanks for the car. Did you know it'll do this?" And the steering wheel would pull off of it.
Mid-drive, like while you're going.
Yeah, yeah. Just the slightest, you know, you had to get it lined just right, but just a little jerk on the steering wheel, and the steering wheel would completely come off, and then you could put it back on, like in a flash. And there was just this little, like, Allen head back in there.
Man, the day I got it, actually, literally, like, within 48 hours of getting that car, I got it. I was a waitress. I bought that car. You know, my parents signed on the loan with me, and I was super proud of it. I was going to make the car payments. We go to school, and I wanted to take the back roads. My mom didn't want me to. I did not understand that was her preference until she started yelling it. And I'm like, just barely got my driver's license. And she's like, no, go that way. And in a panic, I turn it and immediately flip the car.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, that was literally 48 hours after getting it.
Oh, my gosh.
And her coffee cup was the only thing, went flying across my face. Not like it didn't hit me, but like it broke the window to the left of me. And we were just like suspended in the air. Like I'm looking at my mom.
And you looked up at the window and all you could see was the full moon.
It was daytime. It was before school. And we were on these back roads and it wasn't too far from where my parents worked. And someone went to that workplace and said, hey, there's been a car wreck. And everyone came and it was me. And it was no fun because everyone there, you know, knew me. Mm-hmm. And we were suspended in the air. My parents were like, you're going to have to, you learn. They were the type that you learn the hard way. So I paid for it. We got it fixed, you know, a mechanic fixed it, all that. I was grateful to have a good waitressing job and that it was fall in Arkansas when the colors and we get lots of visitors. So it paid for it. So I probably had a couple different wrecks, and I have a feeling that Zach's steering wheel trick was a byproduct.
Could have been.
Clay, well, going back to the story, the Alaska stories.
Yeah. That's what I want to talk about.
I think the thing that stood out to me the most in it was the story of the outfitter that took the two guys.
Yeah.
Was it two guys or three guys?
It was three guys.
Billy Moles.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated the assessment after the fact of all the little things. Like, it wasn't this, I made this huge mistake and that's what put us in this crisis. But he recognized I pushed it too far here, and I pushed it just a little bit too far here, a little bit. That really impacted me in thinking about how I do things, whether that's in the boat, whether that's in life, whether that's, you know what I mean, making commitments and, you know what I mean, tying myself up so I can't make that commitment. I thought it was really profound.
Yeah.
Profound story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I agree. Just every time they delayed for whatever reason, that river was just rising.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, that was scary too to me. I mean, that big fast moving water is wild. Mm-hmm. No, fast moving water, golly. I would have been scared crossing a river that fast, that tall. Yeah.
I encountered a deal like that. A friend of mine and I were going to hike and get to it. You had to cross the river. Mm-hmm. Been raining real hard. And we knew once we got across the river, we'd be fine. And so I said, hey, man, we got rope. I'm going to put the rope around me. You hold on to it. I'll get across. I'll tie that rope to a tree. Then you come across with the rope.
Mm.
And it worked really well. And when we got in the wilderness area, you had to cross the creek so many times, I just got tired of it. So I thought I was going to go up this steep ridge and go back down. And I got up there about 60 or 70 feet. And I got scared, man. I looked down, and I had that rope with me. And I was too scared to come down that thing. That's how steep it was. And I tied the rope on again, man. slid down, left the rope there. But, you know, rope, pretty handy.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, carrying paracord, it fits so small and it's so strong, it comes in handy, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Christine, always respect the water.
Mm-hmm.
We, Josh and I fish a lot. We're out where we usually fish tailwaters here in Arkansas, and so you're near a dam. And if you're wade fishing, you've always got an ear open for the horn. They'll sound a horn saying, we're going to start flowing the water, whatever the word is. Did I say it right?
Generating.
And so you're always listening, and you're moving as fast as you can.
The most unnerving message that I read last year was, the horn on the dam has become inoperable. We don't know when it'll be fixed. So we're out wade fishing. It's like, okay, is the water going to rise? You know, I mean,
put a little Sharpie marker on your waders.
Exactly.
If the water gets above here, let me know. Tell your buddy, pick a partner.
It is fixed.
Which story did you like the best?
Or can I ask you a question?
Yep.
How did I get punked? Because I wasn't clear.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, let's have
the last story. I don't know if you guys, how much y'all were paying attention when you were listening to the podcast.
Uh-huh.
The podcast told the story of a man, two men nearly drowning.
Mm-hmm.
It told the story of two men nearly getting their heads knocked off by a widow maker on an Alaskan river in the backcountry. It told the story of a man and woman who had to spend the night underneath a goat hide.
Yep.
What was the other story?
The bear.
Billy Moles.
It told the story of a man who was charged by a grizzly and had to shoot it.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
What would be the common theme of those stories?
Near
death. Okay. The last story was about a guy who didn't bring enough pairs of underwear to Alaska.
Didn't bring any pairs of underpants.
No, just except the one he was wearing.
So that story being in the lineup would be funny.
Right. We understood it's funny, but it's...
You got punked
because you thought it was going to be life-threatening.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you get it, Josh?
But was it a true story?
It was 100% true.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
man,
I think...
the punk fell through.
Well, the punk, I didn't... I just feel like you kind of accuse people of getting punked, and it's like, I don't know. I don't know that that was getting punked. It was just like, yeah.
Here's the backside. This is the dirt that
backside,
people come to the render for.
Here's the
this
is why the show's backside. Story.
This is. I wrote that VO of saying
VO.
You've been punked.
What's
VO
a VO
for American
voiceover?
Voiceover.
When it's me talking, like scripted talking. I wrote that VO before I ever heard that story because we did it at the last minute and I didn't even hear that story until it was on the podcast.
I got you.
So it was kind of going to be like a joke. It was just a joke. Like, I went to Alaska, I was a fishing guide, we had all this stuff happen, da 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 da. And then I almost ran out of underwear. We just got punked. We thought he was going to die.
Well, it was
a great
story.
Dad, did you understand?
I loved it.
I
loved the story.
I
saw it was kind of goofy.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have it all figured out, but I
well,
loved
clearly,
it. Was my favorite.
Clearly.
It was my favorite story.
No.
Oh, it was a good story.
I was just thinking chafing and BO is not a joking matter.
Especially on a full moon.
Especially.
Okay. Well, it's my fault, guys. Bear Grease world, I am sorry that joke fell on deaf ears.
You didn't ask me what my favorite story was
or what stood out to me.
Let me just tell you what stands out to me. Both in the story you told this afternoon, right here in this live render, and the story that I listened to this afternoon on the actual original Bear Grease Alaska shows. Alaska stories. Something that stood out to me is that I think you downplay your potential connection to death when you come home to me.
100%.
It's like when I was listening to those, I was like, gosh, I didn't know it was that bad. And then today when you're talking about
the
airline,
flight.
I'm like, I always just kind of thought it was in his head that it was actually a dangerous situation, not like the stewardess yelling. By the way, she probably yelled, brace yourself. Brace, not.
It was a weird Canadian phrase.
Move your feet. Give me something.
You know how when you're in Europe, when you're in London, they say, mind the gap. When you're on the subway in London. Yes. It was something Canadian.
And arresting.
But it was like, be prepared for danger.
Take off, you loser.
I think this is a common thing, Misty. And I wonder if other people who are family members to the people who share their stories would say the same thing.
Yeah.
My son, David, when he was 19 or 20, goes out west by himself and goes hiking and comes home. And I say, tell me about your trip. And he tells me about his trip. And, you know, it sounds like he had a good time. And then like a week later, my daughter, who's 2 years older than him, comes over and she's like, good Lord, Mom, did David tell you about his trip? And I make a face and I was like, yeah, he did. She's like, can you even believe that? And I was like, tell me what I can't believe.
What are we
just
talking
to make
about
sure
here?
I know. And the story she tells me about his trip and the story he told me about his trip were very, very, very different.
Mm.
Where he spent like 8 hours in a tree well that he wasn't sure he was going to be able to get out of all
a
by
tree
himself.
Well?
Yeah, like it's snow.
It's snowing. And you know, under the evergreens, it drops down in. The snow builds up and if you drop down in and you don't have anything to dig out with, you can get stuck in there because they can be 10 or 12 feet deep.
Oh, wow.
So he's stuck in a tree well. Like, anyway, we don't have to go into the story.
Maybe
but,
David could be on your next story.
But what David tells me and what actually happened were quite different.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. Very, very different.
And as a parent, you have to hear that story and not look surprised as Mallory's telling you because you got to play it cool. And then you can't call David and say, hey, I've got new intel about your tree well experience and I'd like to talk about it.
You clearly are a better mother than me because the next time
you did.
I said David, I was like, what the heck?
That's good. Good story. Did we ask everybody?
Colby didn't tell a story.
Yeah, which one?
Man, I liked them, and I felt like I could identify with a lot of them on some level. But one made me change how I'm acting now.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the sow charging him, and baiting bears. It's like, hey, I better take a pistol.
Yeah.
Or a can of spray today, because this bait is on fire.
Yeah,
so, but then, like, the one that you told about the fast water, I think that one is the one that would scare me pretty hard. Yeah.
And I could Billy Mole's story.
Well, that one, too. Yeah, both of them. Like, anything with water. I like how he tied, like, the whole thing to Don's childhood. And like, his takeaway where he broke through the fear, where he felt like he was just going to look forward.
Yeah, that was a profound statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was. It was good.
You know, what he said, too, would be real handy for people to know is if you're retrieving somebody out of fast water, don't take them a 90 degree straight to the bank.
Right.
You go with the flow and do a 45.
And
most people wouldn't think of that. I wouldn't have thought of that. I mean, I'd be fighting trying to get the guy straight to the bank, shortest distance, you know, between 2 points.
Yeah. You'd have had rope though.
I wouldn't have gotten that situation probably. Yeah.
I think that in addition to being a great storyteller, providing useful information and practical knowledge that people should take with them into Alaska, Billy Moles also has a name that could be a great country singer name.
Yeah, no doubt.
Billy Moles.
Billy Moles.
Billy, I've known Billy for at least 10 years. He wrote for Bear Hunting Magazine back in the day. And Billy made incredible documentary films about Alaska. He still sells DVDs, but you know, DVD sales aren't as hot as they used to be. But you can still buy them all. And he's putting a lot of his stuff on YouTube and different stuff. But yeah, Billy is he's a great guy.
Yeah,
I really like Billy Moles.
We got a lot of emails, people missing him whenever he got out of the magazine.
Oh, yeah. He was a real good writer. He's really meticulous and he was a good guy. He was, He just was really, really diligent, big, strong guy. I mean, just like kind of a athlete, tough. And
kind
he
of
didn't
guy
even,
you want pulling
he didn't
out of
even
water.
Want, he didn't even want to tell a story about a boat wreck that nearly killed him in Alaska. It's not that he hides that. I've heard him talk about it, but he was just like, that's not that exciting. And I'm like, that's pretty exciting.
You know, the story... The underwear story, when you listen to the very first, he goes, you know, we saw a cabin float down the river. We saw caskets coming out of the grave.
Yeah.
And he mentioned stuff that would have been probably the best stories of anybody.
I know, Randall Williams. I told you I didn't get to listen to that before
it was
before
awesome,
I heard
man.
It. Yeah, if I would have done that again, I would have been like, Hey, Randall, why don't you tell me about when the graves came out of the cut bank?
Josh and I were listening to that together, and both of us were like, whoa, out loud.
Because I asked Randall, I knew Randall was a fishing guide in Alaska, and I was with him last week, and I said, hey, do you have any good, like, harrowing near-death stories in Alaska? And he was like, not really, but once I did have to wear the same pair of underwear for 30 days.
That's perfect.
That's
and so that's how it all started. As I said, hey, I want you to tell that at the end and it'll be funny. But apparently
it was funny.
No, the story was phenomenal. Yeah. The accusation of having been taken advantage of.
We don't like being manipulated.
Exactly.
I heard that. I was like, excuse me?
You were like, I take offense at that. I have not been punked.
I knew what was going on.
I knew exactly that was a funny story.
Yeah, did it bother you, Josh?
Yes, I was offended. Personally offended.
Did it bother you?
I just thought it
didn't bother
me.
I just wondered how the take we have on it is different.
Man, when I go back, I had to go listen to an old Bear Grease podcast today or yesterday for some, I can't remember what I was listening for, but it was one I did like 2 years ago. And I was like, golly, man, why are you yelling? And then I came in here and did VO today and did the exact same thing. I can't help it.
It's a joke in our family's house that Clay wakes up like sometimes. Clay and I are at this weird age where sometimes we just wake up at like 4 a.m. for no good reason. Oh, and we're like, well, I guess we're up now. Let's get up and work. And so we get up and we work, and the kids talk about like in those times, like they'll see me like tiptoe. I have to walk through Shep's room to get to my office. So he'll like sometimes wake up to me like tiptoeing, trying to stay quiet so I don't wake him up. And he's like, but not Dad, man. Dad, like, he talks at a pretty much full yell 24/7.
He is deaf in one ear. You got to give him
it's
that.
True.
Yeah, you gotta yell. You got to talk loud, passionate. Loud and passionate.
Chef said he woke up at 5 a.m. the other day to Clay telling me about how he cleaned something, yelling from the top of the stairs to me in the living room. I'm like, that's enough. Sleep's important for kids.
Maybe that's where the value is different. My kids, they've woke me up so much.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming. Thanks for being on the Render. We've got another Alaska Stories podcast coming out.
Can't wait.
The next one is another one. All different storytellers.
With a different mother.
All different brothers from a different mother. That's right. There's some good ones.
Are we going to get punked?
No punking on this one.
Okay. No accusations.
Actually, the last story, I had to put like a disclaimer on it. Like, if you have small children, you might want to listen to this before you let them listen to it.
Oh.
I'm ready for that.
Yeah, it's a legitimate disclaimer. Okay. Legitimate disclaimer.
Oh, man.
Could you? Gosh, I want to Common Sense Media this.
You'll have
to
tune
Josh
in.
Hold my hand while
you
I
have
listen.
To tune in to the next Bear Grease.
Do you think that I can listen to it, like, based off of your?
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah.
I don't like being. Maybe. I don't like being scared.
Well, it's. You'll see what I mean when you hear it. It's different. It's different. It's very good. It's told
foreshadowing,
by someone.
Folks.
No, I'm not foreshadowing at all. It's so you have to tune in. Thank you guys so much for being here. Dad, good to see you. Josh, Christy, Misty, Colby, Bear Honey Magazine.
Good to see you too, Nuke.
Thanks, guys.
Maybe one day we'll get Render Boy back on.
Render Boy.
Render Boy Brent
Mr.
Reeves.
Brent.
The Render Boy.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.